Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Tuesday, October 5th. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. I'm Monica Leal, your host and the head moderator for the Bring Forth Forums. LL Research has two websites, an archive website at www.llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and a community-oriented website at www.bringforth.org. That's bring, the number four, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla a question, please join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. If you'd like to ask Carla a question live on the air, call 347-884-8770. That's 347-884-8770. And press the one key on your phone when you're prompted by Blog Talk's automated system. When you call, you'll be able to hear the show, but you will be on mute until I patch you through to Carla. When you hang up, you have the option to continue listening through the phone, or you can listen on your computer. When submitting questions, please remember, this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I am Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. You're listening to the worthy successor to last year's live chat on the Bring Forth website. We've gone for sound now, and we hope you like the improvement. Carla, are you there?
I am, Monica. How are you this
evening? Okay, fantastic. I'm having a great day. It's a beautiful day. And we actually have a lot of questions submitted through the website. We don't have any callers yet, so I'm going to take one of the questions from the Bring Forth Forum. The first question is from Norrell. And Norrell says, Dear Carla, first, thank you for your many years of loving service and sacrifice. I pray for both your well-being and the well-being of those close to you. My question is this. As I view the landscape that 3D man lives in, it is abundantly clear to me that no real change is coming through the hands of man himself. I'm 62 and things haven't changed that much. Haiti was poor when I was a child and it's still poor. Much of the earth lived in extreme poverty when I was small. The same condition still exists for the vast majority of mankind. The only solution I see is the direct intervention of the Creator herself. Kind of like a Moses parting the Red Sea kind of thing. We just need something to galvanize man's attention and make him realize life is not just about acquiring material wealth. To me, the direct intervention of the Creator is required to awaken man from his fascinations with all things material. Do you have any thoughts or feelings about this? Thank you.
Hello, Norrell, and thank you so much for your loving words and your prayers for me and those close to me. Truly, it is a great privilege, not a sacrifice, to do this work. So never think that just because I've had a few light momentary afflictions that there is anything but joy in my heart, because that's it. I've thought a lot about what you have to say. I'm 67, so I share your history. In the 60s, when we were teenagers and in our 20s, the landscape looked very promising. Kennedy was president. The deal was getting better for people in terms of government. VISTA started. The Peace Corps started. We were high on getting into space. I haven't done much since then as far as things that people are willing to talk about. But it does look on the surface of things as though it's business as usual on planet Earth. Now, there are a few things that mitigate against that truth, and they don't show, Norrell. They simply don't show. Unless you pay attention at times when things get rough, cast your mind back to Hurricane Katrina and the incredible mobilization that took place all over the planet. People wanted to help the people that were in that terrible hurricane. People still want to help. It hasn't died. It's continuing along with Haiti. Let's think of Haiti, the terrible earthquake that happened there. Think of all that was mobilized at that time. And I think very quickly of George Clooney, who happens to be a name that people know in the movie business. What did he do? He threw everything he had and into creating a way for people to donate using all of the new technology for the benefit of Haiti. That is still a good number. That is still a good way to do it. And there were people on the ground there as soon as they let planes in. There were lots of people on the ground. There were people all over the United States, certainly, that were just desperate to get some things to the people of Haiti that they could use. That's what shows. That is when that huge mass of the tribe of humanity on planet Earth shows its true colors for just a minute. Naturally, it's not news, except for just that minute when there's a tragedy and the tragedy itself is demanding the headlines. They will mention that there are lots and lots of people who want to help. The truth of it is that people are galvanized by disasters to think beyond themselves and beyond the need to make money and to secure resources for their own use. And they immediately think, what can I do to help? So the energy of a lot of people is involved in mobilizing that information when there is a disaster. So there are, even when you just look at the news, there are moments when you can see that the tribe of humankind is alive. Its heart is beating. Its heart is open. And there's a tremendous amount that simply doesn't show. Think about all the people that you know, just the people that you do trade with in stores, the people that go to your church or your synagogue or your ashram, the people at your work, the people that live around you. And think of all of the people that you know, a lot of them women, a lot of them children, but a lot of them men as well, whose hearts have been opened and whom you can count on, no questions asked, to help you in an emergency. Do you need somebody to do this, do that, do the other thing? There are people you can call. And this is true all over the planet. What doesn't show is the fact that people are waking up. Admittedly, it's little and it's late. Not everyone is waking up, for certainly you can see that. A lot of people are still sleeping. They have not awakened to their choices. They have not decided whether to serve others or to serve themselves. Consequently, they serve others a little, they serve themselves a little, and nothing much happens. But there are so many more people that are dialed in, that are awakened, that are seeking to find out the truth now. So many more people than were awakened and seeking when I was 19 and I started meditating with Don Elkins's Louisville Meditation Group, which became LNL Research over the long history since then. I've been in a position where I'm peculiarly vulnerable to know that people are waking up because I have books out. Our group has books out. And so when people wake up, a lot of the times they run across our stuff and they email us saying, I think I'm a wanderer. I have just awakened. What do I do now? Here's my story. And they tell us their story. And it's always a story of not fitting in, not belonging, and all of a sudden everything fitting into place when they got the new information about coming from elsewhere and intending to serve planet Earth here with their whole incarnation. And then they say, how do I do that? And I always tell them your first job is to keep your heart open and allow the light to flow through you, because the passive radiation of light will lighten the consciousness of planet Earth, and what you do for yourself, you do for the planet. And that is what I would tell you as well. When you become concerned that the service to self polarity has won on planet Earth, consider, if you will, how many more people are reading and seeking and doing the best they can to wake up now. And they can't go back to sleep. It's a very uncomfortable time to wake up, because it's the end days. And it's harder to wake up now than it used to be. There's little of the third density light left. So people are working very hard to wake up, to bring themselves into their open heart, and to get ready to graduate. I don't have any solution to the economic, political, and social ills of planet Earth. The dragon thrashes its tail on the negative side. And that's what we see. If it bleeds, it leads. I can only tell you that if you were sitting where I'm sitting, looking at the email that comes in daily to us, you would know beyond a shadow of a doubt that all over the world, everywhere, people are waking up. They are wanting to know, what can we do? And especially the women, especially the children, are actually addressing those ills one way and another, usually by working on the planet itself rather than on the governmental systems. Monica, do you have a follow-up to that? That just scratches the surface, but...
Yeah, I mean, taking on some heavy questions there.
But it's a really good one.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah. Just a quick comment. Something happened interesting last night. I was with some people, and there was a lady there that was a pastor of a Christian church locally, and another person walked up to her, inviting her to take a look at her religion. She was of the Baha'i faith, and the pastor initially got a little offended and started to say, oh, no, that's not the God I serve. And I was just kind of standing there, an onlooker, and I was thinking, oh, what's going to happen? Sparks are going to fly. How can I help negotiate this and maybe mediate this a little bit? And another person walked up, and a very gentle soul, just completely, before I even had a chance to say anything, he completely turned it around. And then we all ended up participating in this beautiful conversation and for about half an hour, and then we all had a group hug and just completely went beyond any religious differences of belief, and we're just relating in the heart. And it was just so wonderful. What could have been a really ugly situation, getting into a heated debate, turned into a beautiful exchange. Nobody even cared anymore about the difference in belief. And when I see things like that, I'm seeing things like that happening more and more often, and just looking around, seeing the people that I know, and seeing such a gentle, lovely awakening process, I really think it is happening a lot more than people realize.
Indeed. Well, if he has questions, please follow up, Norrell. I'll write Monica, and we'll go into this further, because I am not telling you you're wrong. I am just telling you that there's more to it. Okay, Monica, is there another question?
Yeah, there is. Well, we have a couple of callers, but I just wanted to have a quick note to anyone calling in. If you are just listening to the show, you can certainly listen on your phone. If you wish to ask Carla a question live, please be sure to press the 1 key after you call in, and that will alert me to the fact that you want to ask your question live. And that number, once again, is 347-884-8770. That's 347-884-8770. But you do need to hit the 1 key once you connect in order to let us know. Okay, I'm going to take another question from the forum, and it is from our member named Questioner. And Questioner says, hi, Carla. I join in the gratitude for your service. I missed your text chats last year, so I'm happy for the new way to interact. Thank you so much, and I'm glad that you now have this technology. The topic of intercessory prayer came up a lot on the forum recently in several contexts. Lifting up another's concerns, intuiting the right words for an estranged relative at a funeral, addressing fear of nuclear war. I wonder if you could offer wisdom about two intercession questions. Number one, How important is it to understand the specific situation we are praying about? Does it better touch our hearts or make our prayers more powerful when we know all the details? Does it make our prayers less if we just put the whole situation in divine hands, though we don't understand it? But maybe that makes us naive, so we don't do the earthly good we could do. But maybe that spins our human minds in worry and fear. And the second part to my question, number two, any concerns about using particular entities or symbols as the focus of our prayer, such as a non-Catholic joining those who call on Mother Mary, or a Law of One student invoking higher density ETs with David Wilcock's term planetary management? What do you do to respect faith in someone else's gods, angels, saints, divine visitors, if we don't believe in them ourselves? Is this a shared blessing or a dangerous open window for forces beyond our awareness? I'll keep my eyes open for other things to ask next week so you won't get stuck with Gary's goofy questions. Gary was asking some silly questions to get it started. So that's it.
Okay, well, the last part of your question there was fuzzing out on my end, so I don't know what that is. Here's hoping that that doesn't continue. And here's hoping I'm not fuzzing out on my end.
Okay, so you only heard the first part?
I heard most of the second part. The first part was how much do we need to know in order to pray effectively? The second part was what if it's somebody else's gods? What if we're praying across perceived boundaries? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. And the last part that you missed was just a silly joke, so we'll go ahead and leave that.
Okay, well, I don't know who, maybe there was a heavenly editor there that just totally bleeped that out.
Okay.
Well, thank you, dear heavenly editor, whoever you are. Okay, the first part of the question has to do with how much do you need to know in order to pray effectively? Now, my belief is that you work with your humanhood. It's nice to know as much as you can know. On the other hand, it's not necessary to know anything. Prayer is a mystery. Prayer is a way of tabernacling with the one infinite creator. And you're reaching through the gateway to intelligent infinity to do that. Now, the creator is only unitary, obviously. The Law of One says there is only one creator, and that creator is infinite and unified. So we don't have to worry about the boundaries across which we're going to pray. We don't have to worry about how much we know. It's comforting to us to know as much as possible, but you see, pretty much what you know is what the doctors have told the person that's ill or what the person thinks his problem is. And a lot of times this isn't even entirely accurate or, you know, full information. So you're always playing with half a deck as far as knowing what's going on. So you're not praying because you know. You're not praying to somebody you know. You're praying to an infinite mystery, and you're saying, I'd like to draw your attention to this part of your infinite creation, and would you please send your angels to lift up this person because he's really in a bad way. Or right now, there are two nation states on my personal prayer list, India and Pakistan. How do you pray for a nation state? Well, you just leave it in God's hands. You can't really be in too much detail about that for which you're praying, but we had a request to pray for India and Pakistan, and I know that there are terrible, terrible problems there, the same kind of problems that we had at one time in the war between the states, where there was a tremendous prejudice against people that were not white. Well, there is a tremendous prejudice on both sides between the Hindu and Buddhist way and the Muslim, Islam, Baha'i, etc. way. There are lots of Islamic peoples in Pakistan and India, as well as lots of Hindus and Buddhists. And even though we all know that Hindu and Buddhist people preach peace, and so does Islam, there are always those who interpret dogma conservatively and find it necessary to judge others who are not like themselves. So that creates a great deal of problem. I don't have to say all that. I just have to say I bring your attention, Lord, to India and Pakistan. I'm also bringing attention to somebody whose perceived problem is alcoholism. There's a gal, one of my relatives, that has macular degeneration. I'm praying for a woman whose health is frail and whose husband is no longer able to help her. I'm praying for a man that has just died, and so I want to be with him for about 10 days while he completes his healing and enters paradise and absolutely knows where he is and who he is with and so forth. So there are all kinds of reasons that you might have intercessory prayer. And I led the intercessory prayer group at my parish church for 23 years. So this is an old familiar subject to me, and I honestly believe that it does not matter what you know. What matters is that you genuinely want to help. And if you genuinely want to help, then you can pray in a number of different ways. One of my favorite ways is to find a hymn. I love to sing. I've been singing in choir since I was four, so I know most of the 700 hymns in the Episcopalian hymnal. And I'll go and I'll get that hymn that speaks to me about that particular person and that particular problem, and I'll just sing it with my heart in my throat. And, you know, it probably isn't entirely pretty, but it is, you know, totally heartfelt. And I think that's the thing about intercessory prayer is the knowledge that you're speaking to somebody. You're speaking to somebody effective. I knew a very skilled prayer person who was able to declare, she was a Christian Science practitioner, that there was no power in alcohol. And the way she prayed for this person who had a problem with alcohol was to affirm the fact that there was no power in it. And this this patient, I guess you'd say, or this client for whom she was praying, developed an inability to enjoy alcohol. It wasn't that it made him sick. It just didn't do anything, so he quit using it. You just don't know precisely what's going to work, and you have to go with what you feel. As far as infringing on somebody's free will, if you pray for them, you're not saying, okay, this is what I want to do, this, this, and this, get it done. You're imaging, you're visualizing that person in complete and absolute shining health, seeing that person as whole. You have no idea where spirit's going with that. Spirit will do what it needs to do with that. You don't have to know. And let's see, the other part of it was talked basically about praying across boundaries. Can a Christian that's a Protestant join, say, a novena, pray the rosary or something like that? Absolutely. Absolutely. It's the same Christ. It's the same church. It is one God, one church, one Christ, one Spirit. One Spirit among the people of Christ. And it's really too bad that the way we had to object to the Catholic Church back in the 16th century, Martin Luther, all of that, was to make a difference between and take the incense and the flowers and the chalice and all of this stuff away from the altar and make it plain. I mean, this suited Martin Luther, and he had a good point, but it distracts people from seeing that there is only one Creator. And in the Christian church, there is only one Jesus Christ. And it is that Jesus, the King of Love, to whom we pray. Not necessarily a Catholic Jesus or a Protestant Jesus or whatever brand of Jesus, but one Jesus. The Jews and the Islams also have Jesus. And in reading Paramahansa Yogananda's little gem of a little book, his autobiography, he said that Jesus is one of his favorite teachers, and he always declares of himself that he is a disciple of Christ. So you see, there is really only one love. There is only one Creator. And so there is no need to harness your prayers to some dogma, not your own, not somebody else's, but just stay within your open heart, within that faith which has nourished you. And out of that nourishment that has fed you so well, open it up and ask to feed others. Ask that it come through you. As far as using saints or angels, I use them when it occurs to me. And if it doesn't occur to you, then don't worry about it. But if you suddenly get a feeling, oh, I want to send an angel to this person, then call on the angels and say, angels, please send somebody to this person, for he needs to be lifted up. And then tell that person, by the way, I sent you an angel. So you have to ask for the angel in order for the angel to help you, love you, and make you safe. Monica, is there a follow-up to that question in your mind?
Yeah, just a real quick question about what if it's something specific, like if the person has asked for prayer, or let's say they haven't specifically asked for prayer, but maybe they have an illness or something like that. Do you think it's important to ask permission from that person to pray that they receive physical healing? Because, you know, since we don't really know what is for the highest good for that person or what their pre-incarnational programming or what their karmic issues may be, do you generally just see them in perfect health and perfect goodness, or do you think it's sometimes appropriate to pray for specifics?
Well, I think it's probably best to use the visualization method and see the person in perfect health without really going into the details, because so often you'll discover that the details aren't what's necessary. I remember one time I was visualizing a fellow that had supposedly he had brain tumors, and I visualized this person's head, and I was visualizing this head completely filled with light. Well, all of a sudden, everything in my visual field, of course this is inner sight, so it's a feeling rather than an actuality, went white. And I called up my girlfriend, whose son it was I was praying for, and I said, the wildest thing happened, and I told her. And she said, well, the wildest thing happened here. She said, just right when you were praying, she said they did a CAT scan to see where the tumors were, and they couldn't find any. They'd all disappeared. So I think if I'd been saying, you know, close that tumor, make it smaller, you know, it wouldn't have been the same as just visualizing that person in the light. So I think, you know, it's probably better to let them work it out, or the Holy Spirit, or whatever you want to call the mystery. Let the mystery work it out, and just consider that you're interceding. You're standing between that person and his condition. Now, as far as whether it's ethical to do that without letting the person know, I think it's ethical to see that person in total clean health without letting the person know. Now, if you're going to lay hands on the person, if it's going to get personal, you know, if it's going to be intimate, if you're messing with their stuff, if you're going to write them, say, about some advice, ask them first. Don't just tell them that, you know, you can get well, and I know you can get well, and if you'll just take this, you can get well, or if you'll just see this person, you can get well. That's not ethical. You just have to say, is it okay if I pray for you? And is it okay if I give you some advice? And get their permission first if you're going to mess with their stuff, because intercessory prayer is not that which is going to interfere with their experience. But if you physically put yourself next to that person in an email or in physical contact, then you definitely need to ask permission before you open your mouth.
Okay. Okay, very good. Thank you. I'm going to move on to the next question from the Bring Forth Forum from Matt Scryer. He says, Carla, very nice to connect with you. My question is regarding the distortion of free will. I've been thinking lately about the nature of influence and how it appears to me that our actions, thoughts, and desires are all stemming from where we find ourselves in a given moment, along with the influence of how we perceived, lived, and experienced our previous moments. I don't see where will can be truly free of influence, and I'm curious to hear what insight you can offer regarding this topic. I sense that we live the experience of making choices and having free will, and understand this to be what Ra refers to when they use the word distortion. I'm grateful that my influences have led me to a place of experiencing, choosing, loving, appreciating, balancing, etc. But I don't see how one who is influenced in another direction can be expected to live the same choice or experience. Can we really lighten the planetary vibration beyond what is influenced to be? Or are we simply living the current complexity of all that is, which in this place and time happens to be living the experience of lightening the planetary vibrations and balancing the energy centers within what we call ourselves? I'd love to believe in free will and often do, but a part of me also is confused as to the true nature of this experience of choice. So my question may be simply, where does free will originate from within the experiences of a self? He has a second part to the question, but I'm going to leave it here so that it doesn't get totally lost because it's a little long.
Keep going.
Okay. I've come to a place where all is equal and all is beautiful, and this material has helped greatly in my path of seeking. The differential and polarity of all that is, within my current understanding, is what directly supports and defines our experiences of desire, appreciation, fear, lack, and many other experiences that drive us to continue living this experience altogether. I sense that if we were truly free in our will, then this would indicate an ending of the creation, not a continuation of it. There must always be greater than and less than, in my view, for experience as we know it to be able to continue. This indicates to me free will as an experience and not as an absolute truth of who we are and what we may accomplish. I use this analogy. If a planet in its orbit becomes aware of its potential to express thought and realizes in any given moment it could stop in its orbit and reverse orbital path, but chooses through its understanding of free will to maintain its forward motion, it would in this instance have the experiences of contemplation, choice, and free will as associated experiences of complex forward motion through space and time. I sense that the seeing of other potentials as we walk about our days, along with the choosing of what we only could have chosen based on personal and collective influence, as being the nature of the distortion of free will. I'd love to hear what you have to offer to this idea. Namaste.
Namaste, Matt. Thank you so much for your question. It cuts to the very heart of the Law of One, because free will is the first distortion of the Law of One, coming even before love itself. Because it is by using free will that the Creator decided that it wished to know itself better. And we have absolute free will in terms of being able to choose that which we desire. When you look at the very skim of human experience, which I would say is, for instance, voting, you don't have a full play of free will because you can't vote for the person that you think is the best. You have to vote for the person who had the most money and who got the nomination. And the last person that kicked against those pricks, to quote Shakespeare, of course, was John Fremont. And he did not win his election. His point was that nobody should have to stump and make speeches and so forth. They should put down what they believed, and the person should, in the privacy of his own home, read the statement. And maybe there should be a debate, but there certainly shouldn't be advertisements and so forth. And that didn't sell in America, and therefore, in that case, there is not free will. There is only a limited amount of free will. You can choose the one that had the most money in the Republican Party against the one that had the most money in the Democratic Party. And I hope I'm not offending anybody by saying this, but it seems to be the way things have panned out here lately. And it is very frustrating to those who would like a more free choice. But come into the metaphysical self. And again, you were looking as an unawakened person at a person with that kind of limitation of choice, because that person is going to go with the buzz, go with what's been given by the parents, go with what's been given by the teachers, not ask any questions, but do the right thing. And then, of course, the question, what is the right thing, is much too inconvenient to ask, and it doesn't get asked, and the pain of the world hangs on that fact. However, when people awaken to the fact that they are infinite, they are creatures of eternity, and they are much larger than this planet and its illusions and the veil of forgetting against which we all press in order to know more of the truth, you find that you can painstakingly, day by day, evening by evening as you look over your day and analyze the things that you have reacted to in your day. You can learn to know yourself. You can learn to know the voices within you. And it really is a heterogeneous, you know, group. It's not just this is me. It's like there's the you that thinks this, there's the you that does that. There's a whole group of you. And you're more or less integrated. And some people are tremendously well integrated and have shut off all other openings. But then when they wake up, they discover, oh, my heavens, I haven't even been looking here and here and here and here. And I have been accepting these half-truths that I have learned at my mother's knee or whatever. And they begin to learn to know themselves in a deeper and deeper way. I encourage people to do this every day. Sit down at the end of your day. Look at everything that has moved you. The things that have moved you, focus on them one at a time. Say you had an instance of road rage. Somebody cut you off, and you spent, 15 seconds going, and then you finally got, okay, buddy, there's room on the road for you. You're me, and I'm you, and we're all together. Okay, you know, and you get yourself in check, but that moment of rage was there. The person just about killed you in his desire to get somewhere. And, you know, 20 minutes later, you can still see that little red car up on the expressway. He's managed, you know, to cause 39,000, you know, potential accidents trying to change lanes and get someplace. But you can still see the guy. He's not getting anywhere. You know, the traffic is too thick for that. But the important thing is what's happened to you. So you sit there and you relive that, and the guy cuts you off, and you feel what you feel. That's just you. That's impulse. That's okay. A friend of mine calls this minding the monkeys. Take a look at the monkey mind, see where it sent you. Then, holding that on one part, ask for spirit to send you the opposite feeling. Now, that's going to be that patience that you finally remembered to have. You know, okay, buddy, there's room on the road for you also. And then let that build. Let that love of everyone and their poor human misguided need to get somewhere where they can't get faster than they want to get there. Let that love expand, that foolish, silly, naive love that really in the end conquers all. And let that expand until it's just as powerful as the rage. And then hold them in your mind and ask your system to balance. Because you don't want to get caught in the foolish, naive love. You don't want to get caught in the road rage. You want to have a balanced reaction that is compassion and love. That it doesn't as much move you as it is you. That's what you're going for. You're looking to change your mind from the monkey mind of things you were taught and accepted without digesting them, and the consciousness of love that has a feeling of resonance for those things that are true, beautiful, and real. You can't do it for anyone else, that's certainly true, but you can do it for yourself, and that is the right use of free will, is on yourself, always working on yourself. And as you work on yourself, I honestly do believe that you are working on the world. And I honestly believe, and I know beyond any doubt, that as we keep our hearts open, as we love each other, and as we let people love us back, that we change the world. And just ask anybody that has read something like the Law of One and that has been moved by it, they know beyond a shadow of a doubt that their free will brought them to this moment, and their free will allowed them to follow the path of resonance through to become changed. And they can feel the difference in themselves. They can feel the difference in their practice. And that is when it gets really rewarding. After working with meditation and with doing the balancing exercises for decades, I can see the difference in myself. It takes me a lot more to be moved from the default settings that I have encouraged within myself. But if I am moved from them, that's just grist for the mill. It's not a mistake. It's just a chance to do the work. It's a chance to play the game. And the game is choice. And only by true free will do we have that choice. So if you feel that you don't have all the facts, you don't really have free will, well, there are ways to work on that. And the biggest way of all is to consult your own experience and work with your own experience, because that's the one thing that, as distorted as it is, and you're absolutely right about the definition of Ra's use of the word distortion, we all distort the law of one as it pleases us. I think in the very first session there was a wonderful quote about there is no need at any time for anything but unity, but we do choose somehow to distort our experience in ways that seem good to us, and so we do. But to doubt yourself when you're working with your feelings is to, I would say, waste time, because insofar as you have doubts, they can be addressed, and you can address them in your own way, and you can educate yourself. You can read what this person and that person has written, but above all, you can use your own discernment on the present moment and follow the path of residence where it leads. The question I always like to ask myself, and this is the one choice that you really have all the time, is where is the love in this moment? If you don't see any love in the moment, and you see a lot of people scrabbling for an advantage, it's very possible that you need to be the love in that moment. Then the question becomes, how can I love this situation? How can I embrace this situation? How can I harmonize these people? And then you just do your best to work with the energy that you have given to you and that, you know, you have given to you in terms of the people that you're working with. I wish you luck with this, but I hope that you can come to trust the free will that is so fundamental a part of the way things really are. I want to say, by the way, that we at L&L Research have had to put off our next gathering, which is the third cycle of me teaching people to channel. We call them channeling intensives. And channeling intensive cycle three, the introductory session, is not going to be held until February. This is so that I made a free will choice to rest more after homecoming. We had a wonderful homecoming, but I ailed after that. And so I remembered that Ra said that I had set a pre-incarnative choice in place before I was born. If I was not doing inner work to support the outer work that I was doing, I would not be able to do the outer work for a while until I got myself full up with the inner work and ready to do outer work again. So I decided to put everything off until after Christmas. And I do want to apologize to those who had to wait from later this month until next February. But I figure that it's important for me to do that inner work and to stand as a person that you can trust. And so I will be doing that until Christmas, healing up, resting up, and just working a little bit, doing the articles and stuff, but not doing all of the work that I generally do. Thanks, Monica. Do we have another question? Or did you want to follow up that question? Are you there? Okay, I'm not hearing
Monica.
Oh,
okay.
There you are.
I had the mute button on. I apologize.
Hello. so good to hear your voice.
Sorry about that. It was bound to happen sooner or later. Okay.
I was getting ready to vamp.
Uh-oh.
We
All
won't
right.
go there.
Okay. I actually don't have a follow-up to that, so I'm going to take our first caller for today, and this may be our last question because it looks like we've got about 15 minutes left of actual show time. I'm going to take our first caller from area code 512, somebody who happens to be a neighbor of mine, I would imagine. That sounds like Austin, Texas. Hey, are you there?
You bet. Can you hear me?
I can. Who am I talking
Hello,
to?
Hello, perfect. This is Michael Wolf in Austin, Texas. It's nice to meet you, Carla, and thank you for my San Antonio neighbor. Good to meet you.
Good to meet you,
Michael.
Too.
Great.
Okay, so this is a big topic, obviously, and I get that there's only 15 minutes, but on the topic of free will, I do have a couple of comments. And the comment begins with, of course, the knowing that, I would just say in a nutshell, my perspective on this is that free will exists only so long as we believe ourselves to be separated. In other words, if you listen to enlightened masters such as Sri Ramana, they state very clearly that free will is basically a myth in the sense that the only freedom a man has is to strive for and acquire the knowledge of the self, which will enable him not to identify himself with the body. In other words, the body will go through the actions rendered inevitable by destiny, and a man is free to either identify himself with the body and to be attached to the fruit of its actions, or to be detached from it and be a mere witness of its activities. So on the concept of free will, basically what it does is it holds the field in association with individuality. In other words, so long as an individual identity exists, there is free will. And of course, all of the scriptures are based upon this fact. And they advise us directing the free will into thy will be done. So to the extent that we merge ego identity with the notion of thy will be done, the notion of free will disappears. And I am one with what is, free of free will.
Wow. I'm sorry to say that the heavenly editor has edited out most of what you asked. And I fear for my life in asking you to repeat that. And so I'm going to state what I think the heart of your question was and ask you to confirm or to try again. I think that you were talking about the fact that in this little life of one incarnation, we do have the veil of forgetting that has fallen according to the Law of One and the Confederation philosophy in general. And consequently, we do not know precisely why we packed the bag that we packed. We know that we packed a bag. We know that we don't have all of our soul stream's gifts. We don't have all of its limitations or its challenges. We have packed for a weekend, say. We have packed a few relationships in our bag. We have packed gifts, and we have packed some challenges. And in identifying with ourselves as this person, this body, this psyche, this soma, this package, we are often greatly limited compared with the view that we would have of our incarnation were we to move beyond the veil of forgetting and understand the incarnation as we will, say, when we get this fourth density and are able to see the truth without any hindrance. And all I can say to that is that it is necessary in third density to have something called faith and to work with faith. Now, I don't define faith the way most people do because I don't believe it has content. I don't believe that faith is a list of dogmatic points that you believe in by faith. I believe that faith is the faith that all is well. It's an inferential faith in that one infers a trust in the Creator, a trust in one's own judgment before you packed your overnight bag for the weekend, a faith in the rightness of things. And I can say from personal experience, having had many mystical moments in the light, that I have seen over and over again for myself that this is a perfect world where everyone is having the experiences that they came to have, that they wanted to have, and that they hoped would cause them to balance more and more. So am I going in the direction that you were asking? Like I said, there was
not
so
exactly
much...
the The question is about free will.
Uh-huh.
That's the topic that we're discussing.
Okay.
And what I heard you say and what I hear you say is that, yes, we selected a set of experiences. The question is, do we have free will? And what I'm hearing you say, simply spoken to that, is that you say, yes, you feel like we have free will.
Right.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and in a summary, what my contemplation on the table is that we do have free will so long as we believe in separation.
In separation.
So long as there's a separate ego identity, then yes, there is the illusion of free will. But the only real free will that we have.
Oh, there you go again.
Can
I'm afraid that you've buzzed out now.
Carla, I heard it. I'll repeat what he said. He's saying
okay,
we
Monica,
have free
can
will.
You repeat what he said?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Michael, but I can't hear you, so I'm going to have to ask Monica to repeat.
Hey, everyone. We're having a little technical difficulty here. It's our first day using our new premium service, and we're going to have to get these bugs worked out. Basically, the question is, he was making the comment. Yes. Can you hear me?
Monica, I can't hear you either.
Oh, dear. Well, now that's dreadful.
And I can hear you fine, Monica.
Interesting. All right. Well, then, gosh.
Can you hear
Carla
me now,
hear
Carla?
Me.
Okay. I think that I need to focus here and do the best I can to answer the question I perceive you asking. And it's difficult because I didn't hear you. I didn't hear Monica's repetition. But
well,
I believe what you're saying
is
that as long as we're in this illusion, we don't have free will because we can't know anything. But we have the illusion of free will. All right, let's go with that. If we think that we have free will and we can choose whether or not to serve the Creator or to serve ourselves, we are, to the best of our ability, doing so. And we are playing the game that we came here to play, which has its effect on us. Everything we think, everything that we think and then do, and then everything that we do to fruition, those three levels affect our basic vibrational rate to a certain extent. The things that we think affect it only slightly. The things that we think and try to do affect it much more so. The things that we affect and bring to fruition change our balance quite a bit. So whether or not it could be called technically not free will because we don't have full knowledge or whether we're fooling ourselves, I don't think that that is a legitimate argument. I believe that is sophistic because we only have our senses, our intuition, and our insight. That's what we have. That's what we're working with. That's the game. Now, if you say, I don't want to play this game, we don't really have free will, well, you can opt out of the game, but then you've just made your time on planet Earth less effective. You came here absolutely certain that you were going to be able to affect your balance of love, wisdom, and power for the better. And the thing to ask yourself when you come to an ethical choice point is simply, where can I serve the best? How can I love the best? What is the limit against which I am working in this particular phase of the game? And you play it just as if it were a game on a computer. You look at it, you feel into it, and you pick the thing that seems the most loving to you. We're not all Solomon. We're not perfect. We're going to make what we perceive as mistakes. But if we just do the best that we can, I think we're using planet Earth and its opportunity for grist for the mill and turning catalyst into experience and turning ourselves as relatively untrustworthy, impulsive people into sturdy servants of the light, that we are doing. And that's what we came here to do, to love and to be loved. So I think that if you press what we know and what we can know, you are going to be constantly frustrated. But if you assume that you have what you need to play this game, then I think that you will be on the right track. I really do. And I'm really sorry about this technical stuff. I know that Gary, my faithful admin, is going to be on the phone as soon as this is over trying to find out from Skype and from Blog Talk Radio what went on, because I honestly couldn't hear a doggone thing.
Well, this is obviously quite a big topic. Thank you for taking my call. And I'll connect with Monica offline, and we'll just see where the exploration goes from here. Many blessings.
Thank you, Michael.
You wouldn't believe how strange this all sounds, guys. I'm not kidding. This is so weird. I'm hearing speeding cars and people making noises with their mouths and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, wow. That is really interesting. Okay. Well, so we do have some technical difficulties today, and we will get it worked out by next week. We are out of time. You have been listening to Blog Talk Radio's Q&A, In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert, and we would like to invite you to come back next week. We will have our last call next week in this time slot on Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern. Starting the following week, we are going to be moving to premium service on Friday evenings, starting Friday, October 22nd, and we will be announcing the exact time on that, but it will be in the evening. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our two websites, www.llresearch.org. LL Research's archive website, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, The Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And www.bringforth.org. That's bring, the number four, TH, bringforth.org. LL Research's communities website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for Carla before the next show, please visit the Bring Forth forums at bringforth.org, navigate to the miscellaneous section, and post to the thread Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert, submitting questions, or submit a private question to me, Monica Liel, at magicalmoons@gmail.com. That's magic with a K, M-A-G-I-C-K-A-L, moons@gmail.com. And you have a great week, Carla. I really loved your last response, especially since you didn't even hear the question. Bye, everyone. We're going to leave you with some Tangerine Dream. See you next week.